All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is Grimm's Hentai Corner. It's Grimm's Fujo Corner. I think I called it Grimm's Fujoshi Corner. It's been a while. This is a new thing. It's an experiment. We're still testing it out. So far, let's see how you guys like it. We got exactly... bring it up here. Okay, 14 people that give a damn. Yeah, okay. We'll see if maybe it catches on with the next one, but I don't know. All right, so let's go. The cheap rustled steel desk rattled beneath the detective's hand. In the light of the desk lamp, his face looked like a well-carved totem pole. His scowl was so fierce that his eyes seemed about to pop out of their sockets. Oh! Forgot to turn things up a little bit, guys. There we go. How about you just confess, huh? He had been repeating the same phrases in his aging bellow for quite some time now. Akira leaned back in his chair and looked at the ceiling. He wondered if the man would ever get bored. You listen to me, you little... So, sir, your blood pressure! The timid-looking detective taking notes nearby made a tentative effort to calm the older man down. His gaunt features and pale complexion made him look like a walking corpse. Yeah, you're right. I should relax. Hey, you want a pork bowl or something? The detective asked Akira in a somewhat more restrained tone of voice, wiping the sweat from his forehead with a wrinkled handkerchief. Akira didn't reply, of course. From the beginning, he hadn't responded to any of their questions. Ultimately, he was here as a material witness, since they hadn't pinned him down definitively as the perpetrator. But that didn't change the fact that this interview was meant to extract a confession, and there was no way he was going to confess to something he hadn't done. The inspector's face flushed red, contorting more and more as the silence continued. Eventually, he began quivering, all but letting out a snarl before losing his patience for the umpteenth time. Ah, forget the pork bowl! Just confess, damn it! Confess! Sir! Give me that! The inspector snatched the documents from the timid detective and licked his fingers, then flipped through the pages. He raised his eyebrows. Let's see. Citizen number 11298-TM-3099. Unemployed, no siblings, left home after 3 years. Winner of the Blaster Individual Championship. Left home, huh? I could understand if you've been struck with some horrible old hag, but they look like a perfectly nice couple. The distant memory of his foster parents surfaced in the back of his mind. They had indeed been kind. He considered himself lucky. But in the end, they were just strangers. They shared no ties of blood. The detective leaned forward, nose almost touching the papers, and glared up at Akira. We estimate that the crime took place around 3 a.m. The victim died of shock caused by external trauma. Someone beat him from head to toe. You've got no alibi, and you were seen within 200 meters of the crime scene. Plus, you're a regular on the blaster circuit. The inspector slammed the papers down on his desk. There's no one else it could be. How did being a blaster fighter automatically make him the culprit? He could understand them having a bad impression of him, but that didn't give them the right to label him a criminal. It wasn't me. Liar! You did it, didn't you? When Akira stared back silently, the detective sucked in a sharp breath and pointed at him. You blinked. You just blinked, didn't you? You can keep silent all you like, but your eyes are talking. That's right, Detective. It was me. I did it. Akira was beginning to care less and less about where this was headed. If the state was this determined to pin the crime on him, there wasn't much he could do. You're staying here until we get to the bottom of this. You, cart him away! The inspector spat the words with a reddened face. He slammed the steel desk again hard enough to leave a dent. Taking that as their cue, two policemen entered and took Akira's arms. They were the same officers who had arrested him earlier. Come on, we've got a nice room picked out for you. You'll find it much more pleasant than that doghouse you call home. The thin-faced officer sneered, his voice slimy in Akira's ear. Spurred by revulsion, Akira spat at his cheek. His entire face twitching with rage, the officer wiped his cheek with the back of his hand. Akira laughed scornfully. If it's so great, then why don't you stay there? You fucking dog. The second they yanked him out of the interrogation room, the well-built officer pulled Akira's arms together behind him. The other officer unhooked his club. Akira braced himself for what was coming. Got something more to say, huh? The dull thwack of his club echoed down the dimly lit corridor. Grimacing, Akira squeezed his eyes shut and endured it without making a sound. If he let so much as a single groan, yeah, that's what it says. He'd be giving them exactly what they wanted. Come on, you little shit! Let me hear you scream! Harder blows rained down on him as they hurled him back against the wall. He caught a glimpse of the thin-faced officer grinning, his eyes wide with sadistic joy. Who was the mad dog here, exactly? The whole country was rotten beyond redemption. How was anyone supposed to believe in a brighter future? They were long past the point of no return. The beating continued, but the more it hurt, the more determined Akira became to give these scumbags nothing. How much time had passed since they put him in his cell? They'd beaten him from head to toe. A dull ache filled every inch of his body. Without a doubt, this jail was the whitest building Akira had ever seen. Everything was white, from the walls and the ceiling to the floors and bedsheets. Strangely, it made the place seem dim and eerie, even though the facility was lit by so many fluorescent lights that he could barely open his eyes. Occasionally, he heard freakish moans or off-key humming in the distance. If anything, it felt more like a hospital psych ward than a place to house criminals. And in fact, that was precisely what it was. Several years ago, due to a rise in crimes related to mental illness, juvenile crimes foremost among them, the government decided that all criminal behavior was indicative of an underlying psychological pathology. Thus, prisons became institutions providing psychiatric treatment. The government went to great lengths to overturn existing perceptions of prison, such as by implementing strict sanitation standards and using white interiors to emphasize sterility, but what lay within was no less hellish than before. As ever, the government only cared about outward appearances. It felt so pristine here it made him stutter. Akira's bed was soaked with a powerful scent of disinfectants, more than enough to give him a headache. Somewhere out there he could hear a man with a deep voice calling for his mother. Perhaps the merciless whiteness of his room was making him hallucinate. As Akira gazed at his equally white walls, the man's voice called up a memory. You're not my real mom! Akira had been walking down a residential street when a child had burst from a nearby house screaming at the top of his lungs. A woman, probably his mother, had shouted after the child, but he'd run off without sparing her a glance. Akira had only caught a short glimpse, but that had been enough to see the bruises and scars covering the child's body. In the end, strangers were strangers. While it might have been different in another era, right now, everything was hopelessly worn out. No one could afford to love someone who wasn't truly related to them. When you got down to it, the only person you could trust was yourself. The ponderous sound of a door sliding open cut through the din. Akira pulled himself out of his reverie. He could see a guard swaggering down the hallway. Halting in front of Akira's cell, he briefly looked inside with a scowl, then undid the lock and slid the bars open. Clearly, he'd rather be anywhere else. Get out. You've got visitors. Visitors? He couldn't think of anyone who'd come looking for him here. As he considered this, the guard impatiently jerked his chin down the hall. Though it still didn't make any sense to him, Akira slowly forced his sore body to stand. The pure white room into which Akira was ushered resembled a bleached version of his cell. If they shut him up in a place like this, he was confident that he'd go crazy in a matter of hours. The room was divided down the middle by a thin sheet of glass, with chairs set up on either side. You have 10 minutes. The guard's forbidding voice... Yeah, that's what it says. The guard's forbidding voice echoed off the walls. Akira's... It's Akira. Akira's mysterious visitors were already waiting on the opposite side of the glass. A woman. I don't know if that's a woman. A woman seated with a man standing at her side. He'd never seen either one before. At first glance, they almost didn't seem real. Everything about them was too neat, too tidy. It was like looking at a pair of life-sized dolls. As Akira took his seat, the woman's narrow lips widened in a smile. Her skin was as white as wax. Citizen number 11298-TM-3099. Akira had never gotten used to the lifeless numbers the government had assigned him. He stared at the woman in silence. Meeting his eyes steadily, she opened her mouth again. I'll get right to the point. We're here regarding the murder you committed. It wasn't me. Her smile deepened. The chances of you being cleared are essentially zero. Who on earth were these two? Obviously, they weren't ordinary civilians, and considering the way they carried themselves... We've neglected to introduce ourselves. I'm Emma. This is Gwen. We're the sort of people who don't tell you who we work for. Well, whatever that meant, it was clear that they weren't here on his behalf. Let's get back on topic. As I said, there's no chance of you getting out of this. And you know what becomes of murderers, don't you? Her tone was suggestive, prodding. She was testing him. His annoyance building, Akira replied. A life sentence. Yes, and you know what happens to those given a life sentence? A life sentence. Under the new laws of the country, all murderers, regardless of circumstance, received life in prison. But what that really meant was torture, state sanctioned. That lasted until your death. Prisoners were prevented from killing themselves and were tormented in ways designed to ensure that they lasted as long as possible. At times, murderers were killed... Try that again. At times, murderers who killed people in particularly heinous ways were forced to undergo the exact same treatment they themselves had inflicted. I always thought murderers should go that way. It was all to bring the rising rate of violent crime under control, or so the government claimed. At this rate, you will surely receive a life sentence. It wasn't me. Akira glared at Emma, his words imbued with anger. More than he feared death or punishment, he was infuriated by this outrageous treatment. Emma lifted her chin, gesture of contempt. Regardless of how much you proclaim your innocence, it's all over once you're sentenced in court. Listen, we didn't come all the way here just to tell you your fate. Let's get down to business. Emma's eyes held a challenging light. We're willing to release you, so long as you meet our conditions. Conditions? Citizen number 11298-TM-3099, known as in blaster circles as Lost. You're the individual champion for this sector with no recorded losses. Clearly, you have some skill. You people sure have a hard-on for Blaster. He was starting to get sick of hearing about it. Emma laughed a little at his response. Have you ever heard of Toshima? The sudden change in topic took Akira by surprise. Toshima, a district of the Old Lands, the abandoned capital metropolis where criminals gathered to flee the spreading tendrils of reconstruction. The city's existence caused no end of trouble for both the CFC and Nikoran, but neither side was willing to let the other solve the problem. A true solution was likely impossible as long as the country remained divided. I see you've heard of it. Then you must also have heard about Igra, especially since you participate in Blaster. Igra? He'd heard the rumors. Igra was an underground fighting tournament held in the lawless Toshima district. There were more than a few Blaster participants who longed to enter Igra. Unlike Blaster, Igra is no game. It's a fight to the death, winner take all. The champion inherits the throne of Ilrei, and with it, dominion over Toshima itself. Ilrei? That's what they call the leader of Vicio, a drug cartel based in the district. The rabid dogs who lair in that city truly believe that only the strongest may lead them. That's what inspires them to engage in these vicious, bloody fights. It's not just a rumor. Street gangs were one thing, but the leader of an organization like Vicio would need brains, not just brawn. It was as plain as the nose on Akira's face that choosing their leader by strength alone would eventually lead to their downfall. If it's true, Vicio must be a bunch of idiots. And yet, they have grown powerful. To the point that neither we nor Nikoran can ignore them any longer. Do you know why they're so powerful? Because the man who leads them now is invincible. Ever since Igra started, no one has managed to defeat the current Ilrei and take his throne. No one? The first Ilrei who started Igra remains undefeated to this day. You could say that he started this ludicrous game because he was confident that no one could beat him. Without realizing it, Akira's image of the man called Ilrei had become a presence in his mind too great to ignore. The tournament's founder, an undefeated champion who willingly risked his life in position to lay low all the brave souls who faced him. No one would doubt the strength of a man like that. The myth of Ilrei's invincibility is what holds Vicio together. It would collapse in an instant if that myth were shattered, and that... Emma paused to give Akira an icy glare. It's precisely what we want. Akira began to connect the dots. So you're looking for a man who can beat Ilrei. Exactly. For instance, a Street Fighter strong enough to run undefeated in Blaster for 3 years straight would be an excellent candidate, no? It was obvious by now what condition he would need to meet in order to get his murder charge dropped. This icy-eyed woman wanted him to enter Igra to join the Festival of Slaughter and fight his way to the top.
You're the police, right?
You guys are with the cops, aren't you? You're just gonna toss a young man with a bright future into that meat grinder? In response, Emma laughs scornfully. Life in prison isn't much of a future. Besides, we're not like the police, you know. We aren't responsible for maintaining law and order, but rather for eliminating those who would disturb it. Indeed, the detectives who questioned Akira had an entirely different aura than the two currently in front of him. These two, they looked like the sort who treated people's lives as if they were numbers on a balance sheet. We've already made several attempts to infiltrate Vishio and assassinate Il Rei, but all of them ended in failure. Il Rei's defenses are impenetrable. Never mind approaching him. We couldn't even determine his real identity. He only appears during the Igra finals. That's the one opportunity to bring him down. You seem pretty desperate. Are you aware of how much product flows from Toshima to the CFC? Vishio is a cancer eating at this nation. So they saw themselves as serving the greater good, all without getting their own hands dirty. What if I defeat Il Rei and a new Il Rei shows up? Eyes fixed on Emma's expressionless face, Akira questioned her with a challenge in his voice. Or maybe I'll take the job and make Vishio even bigger. Maybe I'll start a branch right here. Emma was not impressed. She laughed harshly, eyes staring down at him as if he were a worm. You would take over Vishio for the sake of wealth and power? Fascinating, but no. We've already profiled you. You hate working with others. Bullseye. He loathed the aggravation that came with leading a group. He had no interest in being a drug king, nor in working for the government. But what he wanted even less than that was to rot away behind bars without ever clearing his name. And then there was Igra, a fight to the death, not safe like Blaster. The victor would earn awe-inspiring renown, and the loser would pay for his weakness with his life. The choice is yours. We won't force you. Emma watched Akira with the eyes of a falcon fixed on its prey. Slowly, Akira felt an emotion rise to his mind. Well, we'll try that one again, because it's a little... Slowly, Akira felt an emotion rise to fill his mind. It wasn't fear. It was a kind of determination, similar to curiosity, or a wish long denied, which brought with it a quiet exhilaration. Igra would be the ultimate battle, one where Akira could give his all. He could fight until his life had been whittled to the bone. He'd always wondered what would happen when his flesh reached his limit. But his military training had taught him both how to kill and how to die. But that was just theory. The war had ended before he could truly test himself. The void that not even Blaster could fill, perhaps Igra might offer something to silence that gnawing emptiness. Either way, his eyes would be over the minute... Try that one again. Either way, his life would be over the moment he turned down Emma's proposal. That's true. All that would await him then was a suffocating cell and the endless grind of torture. They would wear his body and heart down to nothing, until it returned to the nameless dust that had birthed him. If he accepted her offer and succeeded, he'd be free to go, clear to suspicion. Akira doesn't need to weigh the options to know his answer. He slowly lifted his head to face the woman who was, for this one moment, his savior. He nodded without a word. Emma replied with an arresting smile. We have a deal. In that case, you'll need to know how Igra works. Gwen, who had kept silent the entire time, suddenly opened his mouth. The use of firearms is forbidden. Killing your opponent is not. The first person whose back touches the ground loses. Also, once you join the tournament, you can't quit. To join, tell Arbitro, Igra's overseer, and he'll give you the dog tags that prove you're a fighter. This is important, guys, so listen. Tags come in groups of five, and you need to have one hanging from your neck at all times. As long as you keep the other four on you, it doesn't matter how you carry them. That's very important. I think that's going to come into the story at some point. Tags are assigned this... Alright, when he's done. Tags are assigned the same numbers and symbols as a deck of cards. By assembling a particular hand, you obtain the right to challenge El Rey. You can't just challenge him whenever you like, that's all. The way he laid it out so smoothly, voice detached and businesslike, actually made it harder to understand. Akira gave him a silent shrug. In short, all you need to do is collect the right set of five tags without using a gun or letting your back touch the ground. What tags do I need? It's based on poker. A royal straight or a full house. A suit doesn't matter, but all tags must be ranked 10 or higher. That meant either a group made up of a 10, a jack, a queen, a king, or an ace, or a set containing three tags of one rank and two of another, all 10 or higher. Sounds like a pain in the ass. Not particularly. The rabble understand the rules just fine. You leave tomorrow. We'll prepare your weapon and proof of entry, along with any other necessities. Until then, you're to remain at home. We're sending someone along to keep an eye on you. What? Just in case, you can ask them what happens next. That's all. Any questions? Leaning back in his chair, Akira regarded Emma expressionlessly. I'll let you know. Emma turned and slowly rose to her feet. Well then, good luck. As she was about to leave, Emma looked over her shoulder and twisted her lips into a vicious grin. Akira cared little about people's appearances, but even he thought this expression suited her better than any other. Akira wasn't sure what he'd imagined when they mentioned keeping an eye on him, but certainly nothing as ostentatious as this. A pair of men in black suits had been trailing after him ever since he'd left police custody. Their grim, tight-wound demeanor went quite at odds with Akira's casual getup, and he found himself greatly discomfited. Okay, whatever. Greatly discomfited? I thought that would be greatly discomforted by the looks passers-by kept giving them. It felt like being in a bad film. He hurried home, unable to withstand much more of it. By the time he reached his building, the sky was shifting to a deep blue hue. He went down the hall to his apartment and was about to stick the key in the door when he sensed them behind him and looked over his shoulder. Just how far are you planning on following me? Don't waste your breath. His attitude was as haughty as his getup. Akira heaved a sigh. Akira! At the sound of his name, Akira lowered his key and turned around. A figure in blue coveralls, Keisuke, was running towards him, panting. Once he reached Akira's side, he stopped and doubled over, shoulders heaving as he gasped. Akira, what a relief. I was about to bust into the station to find you. You've been waiting here the whole time? It had been quite a while since the cops had hauled him off. I was worried. I figured you'd come here first when they let you go. One of the suited men stepped forward, interrupting him. He stood between Akira and Kaisuke like a wall. No unnecessary contact. Who the hell are you? You aren't authorized to know. Move. Kaisuke tried to shove him out of the way, but the man didn't budge. Get out of here. The other man reached out to seize Kaisuke. That's my line. The two men turned at the sound of Akira's voice. Their movements were nearly identical. You can let me say a proper goodbye. This might be the last time. He emphasized those final words. The suited men considered this for a moment. Finally, one of them muttered an answer. 10 minutes. Got it, Kaisuke. His reply perfunctory, Akira exchanged looks with Kaisuke and unlocked the door. He was about to enter the room when a callous hand grabbed him by the shoulder. Wait, you can talk here. Annoyed, Akira shook the hand off and slowly turned around. Then he seized Keisuke's arm, pulled him close, and draped an arm over his shoulders. I told you that guys were gonna get like that. That's what the Fujo's like. Not so much straight men. So, what we're gonna do when we get to this section, obviously, I gotta cut that. Like, I'll be doing some cutting on these for just, you know, MGTOW.TV. But BitChute, I'm just gonna say the adult part is gonna be more BitChute exclusive, I guess. Guess we're gonna do that. Put Not Safe for Work on it. We're the kind of friends that want to do stuff not meant for an audience. The men froze. Come on. Even Akira himself thought his act convincing. It was amusing to see those cops at a loss. Akira closed the door slowly, dragging Keisuke, who was even more shocked than the cops inside. What the hell? Seated on the bed, his eyes so wide that Akira doubted they could open any further, Keisuke laid his hands on its sides and leaned forward in disbelief. That's so unfair. Toshima, of all places. And you can't leave once you start? It's like they're sending you to die. I would have gotten a life sentence if I refused. Same difference. But, grimacing as if it were his life on the line, Keisuke cast his eyes downward. Isn't there anything we can do? He let out a low groan and flopped back on the bed. Akira hadn't planned to tell anyone about his mission. There was nobody he considered close enough for that. But now that Keisuke had seen him with his surveillance detail, Akira had opted to give him a short explanation. He and Keisuke had grown up in the same orphanage. They were what you might call childhood friends. Akira hated being tied down, but it wasn't as if being around other people repulsed him. It was just that most people kept their distance, unable to cope with his terse demeanor. But Keisuke wasn't like most people. He was always following Akira around. Though he's kind of unreliable, Akira didn't dislike his honest, some would say naive, personality. Ah, jeez. Keisuke sprang up all of a sudden, making the bed creak loudly. What? No, I know freaking out won't help, but I just gotta do something. Akira, who was sitting by the wall, let out a small sigh. I made the choice. It's my problem. The light from the room's single lamp wavered, casting deep shadows over Keisuke's profile as he bit his lip and stared into space. You're so strong. Still standing in place, he murmured as if he were talking to himself, then exhaled a long, slow breath. All I have to do is collect the right tags, then beat Ilri, whoever he is. Those words made Keisuke frown. Akira knew this fight wouldn't be easy, but if there was no other way, then his only option was to get it over with. Keisuke, why was he taking this so hard even though it had nothing to do with him? Whatever happened would be the result of Akira's choices. Nobody else could change his fate. Despite that, seeing Keisuke like this made Akira wonder if he had a heart at all. Supposing their places were switched, would Akira be this worried about Keisuke? The answer was probably no. So nothing did happen. Several hours after he'd slid under his blankets, having finally sent the fretting Keisuke away, he awoke once again to the sore of his to the sound of his door slamming open. This was the second day in a row that this had happened. He felt like he could justify being in a bad mood. He rose sluggishly, knitting his eyebrows at the pain in his head. Cold crept up from the soles of his feet. The digital clock atop his refrigerator told him that it was well before dawn. Unsatisfied with having interrupted Akira's sleep, his visitors came trampling through his room without any concern for courtesy. Get up! Time to leave! The same black-suited pair as before stood beside his bed, looking down at him. One of them tossed a small, heavy bag. He opened it. Inside were solid emergency rations, 3 500-milliliter water bottles, an envelope of money, a sheath knife, a phone, and a bundle of 5 dog tags, which would serve as proof of his participation in IGRA. Each tag was engraved with a number and a symbol, a 3 and a jack of hearts, a 6 and a 7 of spades, and a 2 of clubs. According to the guy named Gwen, he had to take tags from the other participants and form an appropriate poker hand. In other words, the only meaningful tag currently in his possession was the jack of hearts. The remaining 4 were all junk. He needed a 10, a king, a queen, and an ace. Or if he got another jack, he could also go for a full house. Move. Pushing the cops aside with both hands, Akira began making his preparations. Having two men stuffed into his already tight room made the process difficult. He stuffed a bare minimum of clothes into the bag's remaining space and took a bottle of soda water from the fridge and gulped some down to wake himself up. Today, its cool, bubbly passage disagreed with him. As he finished getting ready, he happened to glance at the shelf. A knife and worn-out leather sheath was lying there. He picked it up, dusted it off, and drew the blade. Light and well-balanced, it had a beautiful shape with a decorative engraving. Most of the design had been scratched away, but he could still make out the letters on the blade's base, probably words in some foreign language. He couldn't remember how long it had been laying there. Vaguely, he recalled having received it during his military training, but he had a feeling it wasn't meant for practical use. It was much more durable than it appeared, though, and easier to use than some random knife. He'd kept it all the time because he liked how it looked. Might as well take it. Ease of use was important, and he was accustomed to handling this one. Putting the knife the cops had given him on the shelf, he retrieved the more familiar weapon and stuck it through his belt. His preparations complete, Akira shouldered the bag and headed outside. He didn't bother to lock the door. There was nothing in the room that mattered. The morning sun was hazy, but still sufficient to make him squint at its brightness. Here's how you get to Toshima. The man began explaining the way, his tone of voice suggesting that he was only repeating what he'd been taught. The road from CFC to Toshima was all but straight, so there was no need to worry about getting lost. However, he would have to pass through several outer sectors of the old lands, rather, before reaching his destination. It would be difficult to make it there safely alone. We've prepared a guide. You'll meet him at the border. A guide? He's an odd one. You'll know him when you see him. With his help, you'll have no trouble getting through the old lands. If this man could traverse the old lands, he might be quite capable. It all seemed rather suspicious, but with nothing else to go on, Akira reluctantly began walking towards the border. Okay, and that's where we're gonna leave off for now. I thought there was gonna be a scene, but there wasn't a scene, or maybe I didn't install the patch. I don't know. We'll find out. And at any rate, this is the Grim Lord, and I am out for Grimm's Fujoshi Corner, and we'll see you next time with more Taganonochi.